pretty sure that most of you have heard the old story that someone came up to me and said, "Hey, I hear you don't play golf with Billy anymore." And I said, "Well, would you play golf with somebody that talks in your backswing?" They said, "No, I wouldn't." Well, I said, "Would you play golf with somebody that moves the golf ball when their ball's in a bad spot?" They said, "No, I wouldn't do that." I said, "Would you play golf with somebody that cheats on their scorecard and writes lower scores than they actually make?" And they said, "No, I wouldn't." And I said, "Well, Billy wouldn't either." That's sort of the way marriage is sometimes. There are just things that go wrong, and we don't treat each other well. We think in different ways. We think that some things would be acceptable, and others think that those things are not acceptable. And so spouses begin to grow apart. And sometimes in marriage counseling, someone would tell me, "I don't love him or her anymore." And I said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" And they start telling me how they feel. And I'm saying, "That's not what love is about." And so we start thinking about what love is about. People that love each other do what needs to be done for the other person. It's an interaction of doing, and the doing brings about the great feeling. And so we want to think about what is it that makes a godly marriage, not just one that feels good. Marriage in our culture has come to be a relationship of self-satisfaction. If you make me feel good and you satisfy my needs and my desires right now, I'm into the marriage. But when you stop satisfying my desires and I don't feel good about you any longer, the marriage is over. Well, that's not exactly the way the Bible discusses marriage, the way our culture views it today. So, as we read a little while ago, Peter is going to tell us something about a godly marriage. It's not what our culture wants to hear in some ways, and yet it's what we need to hear about a godly marriage. Those that are older need to hear about a godly marriage. If you're still in a marriage and you've been married 50 years, you need to keep thinking about what a godly marriage is all about, because it's still about doing what needs to be done. Over and over again, I've had a spouse that would say to me way early in our relationship, "Don't you tell me you love me if you're not going to do what I need you to do." And so she would help me understand what love is all about. And so we would have those discussions. And that's really what God is going to be teaching us. It's not about how we feel. It's about what we're willing to do with each other and for each other as we live life together. Peter has some pretty strong things to say about a marriage. Well, God started this thing at creation. When God created man, he looked at all the animals that were created, and there was not one suitable for man, one fit for man, one that fits together with man in the right way. And so God, in his infinite wisdom, created woman, a helper, one suitable to, one comparable to man. And so God designed that. And when God designed that, he began to think in ways that we ought to think. God said that he created them male and female. A very special purpose for a man being a man and a woman being a woman. It's not just some happenstance thing that we have a group of men in this room and a group of women. God created us that way, male and female. And God's design was for a man to leave father and mother, to cleave to his spouse, his wife, and they shall become one flesh. The reason God created us, man and woman, is so that we could come together in a relationship and be one flesh. God designed us that way. That's his way, and that ought to be our way. I want to share with you some things about a godly wife that Peter tells us about. First thing is Peter tells us that a godly wife is to be submissive to her husband. Well, if I were standing on a street corner in New York City or some other large city, and I'm preaching about marriage, and I begin to tell all of those passers-by that you women that are in a marriage relationship need to submit to your husbands, I don't think they stone people in large cities anymore, but there would be emotional stones being thrown. We don't want that in our culture. We don't like that in our culture. And we think that it's something that is negative. We think that submission puts somebody down below someone else. That's not the way life works. It's not the way it works for us. But in marriage, we tend to look at it that way. I remember when years ago, when I served as a vice president at Freed Hardeman, there was a guy named Cliff Bennett that worked with me as a dean. If you look at the hierarchical arrangement of that, I was his boss. I could ask Cliff to do things and take responsibility, and it was his job to do that. Does that mean because I had a position where I could encourage him to do things and he would be required to do it, does that mean I'm superior to him, I'm smarter than him? It means nothing of the sort. It means I have a position and he has a different position. And that's all that it means. And so when we start thinking about submission, because he would, in a real sense, submit to my direction at work, I would go out to where I was preaching and he was an elder. And I was required by God to submit to him. Did that mean that he was superior to me? Does it mean that he was smarter, better looking? You just name anything you want. That's not what submission is about. Submission is a responsibility that God gives to a wife. It's a responsibility, and it is so very real. Now, in our culture, we hate this, and there are some ministers that go out of their way to try to say that really the Bible doesn't teach that. And they'll go to a passage like chapter 5 of the book of Ephesians, and they will teach us that that text, in that context, it says submitting to one another. And so we're to submit to one another. It doesn't mean that one is to submit to the other. Well, if you look at that passage, what happens there, Paul tells us that there are ways in which we all submit. And then he gives examples. He gives the examples of children submitting to parents, of slaves submitting to masters, and in that same context, wives submitting to husbands. Well, Peter does the very same thing here. He says, in the same way, be submissive to your husband. Well, what in the world is he talking about? Well, if you go back to chapter 2, beginning in verse 13, Peter has a discussion about our relationship with the government. We submit to the government. And Peter talks about that. Romans 13, we're to be in submission to the higher powers. God designed life to be that way. And so we understand what it's like to submit to higher powers in the government. We're not going to, on April 15th, call up the president or anybody else that's in authority in the government and say, excuse me, but I am not paying taxes. I don't want to be in submission to you. That's not really what that means. You can't tell me what to do. Well, you see, we don't do that. We understand what submission is. And then he goes again into a master-slave relationship. And he is letting us know that we have, in the same way, wives, a responsibility to submit. Now, it is a different relationship, isn't it? And God gives us guidelines by which we are to relate to each other. And in just a little bit, he's going to begin to give the husband some information that they need to live by that are pretty demanding and pretty tough, that are hard things for our culture to grasp and to utilize in a right way in that relationship. So wives, in the same way that you submit to the government, in the same way that if you have a job, you submit to your boss, wives, be in submission to your husband. Secondly, a godly wife behaves in a chaste manner instead of preaching. Well, does that mean that you women should never teach your husbands the gospel in any way? There are some super teachers in this room that would make better preachers than the one standing before you. But God did not design women to preach in public. But does that mean that they could not teach someone in a private setting? Certainly you can, and you should. But a godly wife in a marriage, what we have is some wives who begin to teach their husbands in a right and in a godly way, and the husband rejects that. So what do you do? Do you go back and start preaching? I remember Kelly Doyle telling a story many years ago about a guy that just couldn't talk very plainly, and he had a very nasal talk, and he would talk like this, and he wanted to be an insurance agent. And the agent, the guy that was hired, said, "You can't do that. You just won't be able to sell." He said, "Please give me a chance. Give me a chance." And so he goes out, and he comes back in about a week, and he sold more insurance in a week than anybody in the company had ever sold. And the guy sat him down and said, "Tell me how in the world you do that." He said, "Well, sir, you gave me this manual." And it was a big, long manual, and I didn't have time to memorize it. And so I would sit down with the customer, and I would say, "Page one." And I would read that, and I would say, "You want to buy some insurance?" And they'd say, "No." I'd say, "Page two." And he said, I would just keep going through until they bought insurance. You see, we would not be able to take that. And sometimes that's the way people preach. That's the way some of us do. You think some of our sermons are long, 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 and they are. And you get tired of it, and it doesn't do you any good, does it? Well, the thing about preaching, it becomes nagging. And so what we have, the wife's Christ-like behavior, not her words, are going to win this husband over to the Lord. She's already taught him. She's already preached to him, if you will. He already knows what he needs to do, and he's not willing. And going over it and over it and over and again is not going to work. Peter said, if you want to win your husband over, close your mouth and behave in a godly, chaste way. You see, that's hard words, isn't it? Because some of us just can't quit. We just have to keep going. And so what we want to do is to think about a godly wife living in that kind of fashion so well before her husband that he sees this chaste behavior. And that faith that is worked out throughout her life is a super powerful testimony to the truth of the Christian message. And so a godly wife is to behave in a chaste manner instead of becoming a preaching wife. We would put / nagging in regard to that. And then third, a godly wife possesses inward beauty. There are so many beautiful women in this world. We've got a bunch of them in this room. But you can turn that beauty off with your attitude, with ugly words, with ugly behavior. It takes something from the inside out for someone to be consistently thought of as a beauty. And so Peter says a godly wife needs to possess inward beauty. And then he gives us three substitutes that women use in place of an inward beauty sometimes. First of all, he says they'll fix their hair and fashionable, elaborately so, like the braiding of hair Peter mentions specifically. Is there anything wrong with you women fixing your hair? We want you to. We want you to have your hair looking as good as it can possibly look. But that's not the key to beauty. That will not win people over. Secondly, Peter says gold jewelry. There are some people that love jewelry. They'll have a ring on every finger. In these days, they got a ring in their finger, in their nose, about six or seven of them in their ear. There's gold jewelry all over the place. But that's not going to get the job done in terms of the kind of beauty that makes a godly wife. And so we need to be thoughtful about that. Is there anything wrong with jewelry? Nothing wrong with jewelry in and of itself. But we cannot use that kind of thing to substitute for inward beauty. Thirdly, fine clothes. This has the idea of gaining beauty by putting on a certain style or a certain kind of clothing. Now, if you look at all three of these things, girls, I can tell you, men want you to be as well-dressed, as well-made up as you can be. It's a great thing. We just watched a Hee Haw production out at Williams Auditorium. And there's a woman in there, Laverne. And in that skit, Laverne is never dressed. She's never made up. And she plays the part of the looks and the attitude that just make us smile. We don't go away thinking, what a beautiful woman. We go away laughing because of the humor that's involved. But we will never go away from that skit thinking, what a beautiful, beautiful woman. So we can't substitute these kinds of things. So Peter says, let me tell you what inward beauty is about. First of all, he says, respect, a reverence. And that is a reverent, respectful, humble attitude. It's not an attitude that's arrogant and I've got to have my way. I'm going to get what I want kind of thing. A godly wife is going to act and behave in a reverent way. Secondly, he talks about purity. That is a woman that is different from the woman of the world. A woman that's going to behave in ways that she should. She's going to sit like she should. She's going to walk like she should. She's going to talk like she should. She's going to dress like she should in order to appear and to actually be holy, different from a woman of the world. Going to be faithful to her husband. Purity is going to be a tremendous hallmark of a godly wife. And then third, oops, pushed the wrong button. Sorry about that. Gentle. Now, this doesn't mean that you're just going to lay back and say, okay, you tell me what to do. I'm your absolute slave. You're my absolute master. It doesn't mean that at all. But a quiet and gentle spirit carries with it the idea of meekness. And that word, one of the strongest meanings of that word, is strength under control. And an illustration that I read many years ago that I think is so apt to describe what meekness is all about is to take a big, strong horse and you put a bridle in its mouth, a bit in its mouth, and the bridle, and you can turn that horse, you can get that horse and ride it, you can use it for work. It becomes a great piece of equipment, if you will, if you get it under control. But if that horse is wild and you can't harness it, you can't get it to do what you want it to or what it needs to do to be of service, it is of no good. That's the kind of thing meekness involves. And then one writer says, this gentleness is a woman who is not impressed by her own importance. I have got to be the queen of my family. Should a wife be the queen of the family? Absolutely. But when one demands to be the queen of the family, something has gone wrong. And so this gentleness is something that Peter says is so very important. And then quiet just means well-ordered. It doesn't mean sitting over silently. In fact, with regard to women in the church, we talk about silence. And one of those words just means quiet. It means not boisterous, not demanding, not absolutely having to have a say at this moment and your way at this moment. But well-ordered. You say what you need to say at the right time, in the right way, and you are going to be then a godly wife. And so a godly wife is going to possess inward beauty. And then he closes this part of his statement about a godly woman, a wife, by saying a godly wife imitates Sarah. Well, what does that mean? Have a baby when you're 90 years old? Well, I think not. That's not exactly what he was talking about, though Sarah did do that. But she behaved in faith. She trusted in God, putting her hope in God. I can't imagine having been given the promise Abraham and Sarah were given to have a baby at their stage in life, 75 years old. I cannot imagine having to wait 25 years for that to take place. It just doesn't make sense to us. But God invited them to wait. And there were times when their faith would falter. Abraham even held up Ishmael and said, "This, oh God, is the son of promise." God said, "No, it's not. You're going to have a wife of your own flesh." And so we look and we see them stumble, but they consistently trusted God all the way to the birth of that baby. So she trusted God by putting her hope in Him. And that's what a godly wife is going to do, like Sarah did. Sarah obeyed Abraham. And obey means being subject to. When you start thinking about that, we're going to talk about that in a moment and what that means in a relationship between a husband and a wife. It's not an absolute dictator so that a wife is told every move to make, every thought to think, every word to say. Something has gone wrong if that's one's idea of what obedience is in a marriage. But Sarah was obedient and she was right in doing so, God says. And then she was righteous. That is, she chose to do what is right. She just kept on doing what's right. Sometimes it seemed like she was being mistreated, and like with the birth of Ishmael, she didn't appreciate that very much. And it seemed like she became rebellious. She was just like you and me. You could point out some difficult times where she wasn't everything, it seems, that she could have been. No wife is going to be everything that they ought to be every moment, but a godly wife is going to walk in the pathway of righteousness, going to consistently do what is right. Will mistakes be made? Absolutely. We all sin even and fall short of the glory of God. So a godly woman is going to be like Sarah in righteousness. And then he says, encourage. And this word helps us to see that Sarah was not intimidated by frightening, difficult circumstances. She was in a lot of those. There were times when they would travel into a foreign country. You remember twice, Abraham lied. "This is my sister." She was his half-sister, but he wasn't saying, "She is my sister," to give them appropriate information. He was giving that information to cover up the real relationship that they had as husband and wife. So she was in a lot of difficult circumstances with her husband, Abraham, in all of their journeys, in all of their life. And she stood courageously doing what a godly wife is supposed to do. And so we have a lot of information there about a godly wife. Now, let's look at a godly husband quickly here. A godly husband lives wisely, one translation says, considering, in consideration, or considerate of his wife, and understanding. A husband who is godly is going to do everything he can do to consider his wife, everything about his wife, her temperament, her desires, her abilities. He will not be demanding things of her that she could not possibly do. He's going to be considerate of the way God made her and the way God made him. I'm telling you, we're different. Have y'all noticed that? If you haven't noticed that, there's a really good book that's old now, but it's still just as practical as it could be. It's called His Needs, Her Needs. And this study, out of thousands of couples that were interviewed, gave the top five needs of men and the top five needs of women. I would say that in my marriage counseling over the last 40 years, when I ask a husband, "What do you think this woman needs more than anything else in your marriage?" "Well, I don't know." And he didn't know. He had no clue. He knows what he wants. He's not even sure it's what he needs. He knows what he wants. And he knows he's not getting what he wants, and he's upset. But when it becomes time for him to wisely consider who his wife is, what she needs, and understand that she is not like him. She isn't going to want the same things that you want. She's not going to want the same thing you want as often as you want it. And our lack of understanding and wisdom in dealing with our wives creates a lot of problems. So a godly husband is going to live wisely with his wife. Secondly, you're going to live respectfully with your wife if you are a godly husband. You're going to treat her with honor. You're not going to be putting her down to your buddies, and especially you're not going to be putting her down to your buddies when she's there in the presence of you and your buddies. You're going to treat her with great honor. And you are to live with her in the same way that the church lives with Christ, and Christ lives with the church. Treat with honor the most valuable person in the world is your wife. Guys, treat her like she is the number one person in your life. Honor her, respect her, and treat her in that way. Then you will be a godly husband. And a godly husband understands that though the wife is weaker in one sense, she is equal in another. Peter clearly says, the weaker vessel. There's no doubt about the wife being the weaker vessel. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean that she is not quite as bright and she's weaker intellectually? Does it mean she doesn't quite have the same ability level as the husband and she's not quite his equal there? What does that really mean, that she is the weaker vessel? Well, most likely, Peter is referring to a physical weakness. Now, in my marriage and the family class, I was always saying goofy things. In sermons, I say goofy things sometimes, don't I? But I would say, now, there probably is a wife that could body slam her husband. That's not generally the case, however. Most of the time, the male is stronger than the female in a marriage, physically stronger. But when we start thinking about that, in our culture, there's so much spousal abuse. Guys beat up their wives and hurt them physically because they can when they don't get their way. They are rough and bully because they are bigger and stronger physically, and this is not an occasion for that. That is not really what a godly husband is going to consider. But he shows us they are equal to us as heirs together of the grace of life. And so we need to be people who are thinking in terms of, though our wives, guys, may be physically weaker, they are not inferior, they're not weaker in any sense with regard to the grace of God and with regard to our position before God. And so we have to live wisely and considerately. We have to live in a way that we show them respect, even though we might be stronger physically. We must honor them in great, great ways. And the results of this kind of treatment, Peter says, when you treat your wife this way, your prayers will not be hindered. You see, some of us may be mistreating our wives, not honoring them, not respecting them in the way that we should, and then praying to God for all kinds of things. God is helping us to see if we want Him to listen to us, we must listen to Him. And so we treat our wives considerately, with respect, and with great honor. Now, when those kinds of things occur, what's going to happen, our marriage relationship is going to reflect the same kind of relationship that Christ has with His bride, the church. That's what we want. That's what a godly marriage is all about. There's a lot of work for you wives. There's a lot of work for you men. But when we put it together in a godly marriage, how great a life here in this world can be. Perfect? None will be perfect. But great? Absolutely. Tonight, I'm hoping that there's not a person in this room that is missing out on that marriage with the Lord. That you are not going to walk away if you're not baptized into the body of Christ, which is His church, which is the bride of Christ. My prayer is you will not walk away from the opportunity to do that tonight. And so I encourage you, as we think about this invitation song, if you need to be baptized into Christ, what a great time to do that. As we think about the respect and honor that God has bestowed upon us in sending His Son to suffer and die, that you and I might reverently, lovingly submit to Him and be born into His family. If you're a child of God and not faithful, please think about where you're going in your life and where you're going eternally as we sing this song. And if you need to respond to the Lord, please do. Would you stand and let us sing?